The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
welcome to another edition of Thought Crime Radio. Let's not do that right now. Okay. So I'm Rich, and Janelle is with me here in the studio.
Hello, thank you for joining us again.
And today we have sort of a mixed bag. Our guest...
Our guest Julie from France could not be with us today after all, so we have planned a mixed bag, as you say.
Hodgepodge. So, isn't it great to have these little companions in our pockets all the time?
Oh, I don't know what I'd do without this darn texting, even though sometimes I don't like it.
So,
but I love technology.
Yeah.
Used appropriately.
Used appropriately, yes. So to lead off, I would just like to point out to the listeners something totally unrelated to obstetrics, which is the a bill in the Senate. It's already passed the House. It's called the Federal Reserve Transparency Act. It was introduced by Representative Ron Paul. And... apparently passed with overwhelming success in the House. It basically addresses issues that should have been brought up years ago with the institution of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, which was a huge giveaway to the banking interests that wrote the bill. You know, this was long before, of course, the internet, and so many things happened in utter secrecy back then. These days, we can see the seamy side of the political process in Washington on a regular basis, and it's pretty disgusting. But what they got away with back in 1913. Was really an overthrow of the control of the economy by private banking interests, and there's been a lot of questions about who actually owns the Federal Reserve. One thing we do know is that it's not a government agency. You can find this out for yourself if you go to the Delaware Secretary of State's corporate registration website and do a lookup on Federal Reserve, and you'll find that it's registered as a nonprofit corporation. So exactly what this means, you need a lawyer to tell you probably, but there is no secret about who actually controls the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is controlled by a board of governors that are appointed by the member banks of the Federal Reserve, who in turn are owned by the shareholders who own those regional banks. And I'm talking about people like the Rockefeller family. Basically, we don't even know who actually owns. We do know that they are private corporations. In all likelihood, it includes foreign corporations and very old secretive money in Europe, for instance, the Rothschilds. Names that occasionally pop up, but hardly ever in a current context. Anyway, so one of the main problems, of course, is the Federal Reserve has no independent oversight. There is no at least two sets of books, one of which is completely secret. The other is occasionally open to the GAO. The Board of Governors determines our monetary policy. They determine how much money is in circulation. They determine the interest rates. And this is all kept secret. These policies don't come out in the news for months or years until months or years later. And this is a huge conflict of interest because the people who come up with these policies, these private bankers, can, of course, position their investments according to how they intend to steer the economy. And this is just elementary, just an elementary ripoff, probably amounting to hundreds of billions of dollars over the years, if not trillions. The Federal Reserve was instituted in order to eliminate business cycles, and they have a horrible record of failure in this regard. The Great Depression was only the most... at least until now, this current catastrophe was the most notable failure of the Federal Reserve. And it's no secret, even Ben Bernanke, in his doctoral dissertation, admitted that the Great Depression was a result of policy decisions made by the Federal Reserve. Just as the succession of bubbles that led to the current economic crisis was a problem with the policies of the Federal Reserve under our great economic sage Greenspan. So it has a huge record of failure. And remarkably enough, these failures tend to benefit the shareholders, the banking interests, such as Goldman Sachs. Materially benefits their bottom line. So it's hard to it's hard to attribute these failures to mere incompetence and stupidity. You know, economics is not rocket science. I was just talking with a economics professor at the university last week, and he was telling me, you know, I had no idea that there was so little oversight over this process, but I always assumed that for every dollar bill that was printed, you know, out of thin air, that there was a corresponding debt instrument, such as a treasury bill, that was sold at treasury auctions to, you know, balance the books. But he said that, you know, it's sort of a gentleman's agreement. There's a rough parity, but it's largely a matter of decision as to, you know, whether they would... for instance, when they printed up these pallets of dollar bills or $100 bills that they sent to Iraq several years ago, you know, they shipped it in on wooden pallets, just piles and piles of money. That money came out of nowhere. It was simply an arbitrary decision by, I guess, the Federal Reserve or whoever controls the Federal Reserve. So obviously, if they can ship this bribery money to Iraq, which is essentially what it was, this is how they set up the awakening councils in Iraq and bribed the local officials to cooperate with the invading army, the Allies. You know, if they can do that, they can certainly bribe senators and congressmen and military officials and mayors and whoever else they want. These people have an infinite amount of wealth at their disposal. It's as if they came from an alien planet and they had superior technology and could just take over without anybody being able to stop them. Because power doesn't come from the barrel of a gun at all. It comes from the money-making process in operation in any given society. So, I would suggest that you listeners out there do some research and find out about the Federal Reserve, and also go to monetary.org. Monetary.org will explain a bill which has been approved by a number of congressional members, including Dennis Kucinich, called the American Monetary Act, that would nationalize the Federal Reserve and place monetary policy back in the hands of publicly elected officials. So, this is very important stuff. This is probably the most crucial issue of our time. And getting into the health care bill.
Well, I wanted to just mention that if people want to check out what you're talking about, one of the best resources I know is the film zeitgeistmovie.com, and it's Z-E-I-T-G, as in go, and E-I-S-T movie.com. And it talks about the feds, and it talks the Federal Reserve, and it talks about the banking and the war, and there are two films there. The first one, first 40 minutes, talks about the role of religion in our society and how that's contributed to the banking and the wars that we've been going through. So if you want to skip that, go to 40 minutes, and it explains all this about the feds. And I was shocked when I first learned that the Federal Reserve is not federal at all.
Yeah, all this stuff has been coming out lately, and you know, people understand for the most part that they print money on printing presses, and it really does grow on trees, or at least
for some folks.
Comes from cotton fields or whatever, that there is nothing backing this. This is a huge Ponzi scheme. Essentially, the central banking system of the world is a huge Ponzi scheme, and it will only work as long as people have confidence in the money that they print. And somehow all of this money that's created out of thin air acts as a vehicle for the funneling of massive interest payments to wealthy bankers. So essentially this is a scam, and they are looting this country and most of the rest of the world for trillions and trillions of dollars, and they apparently expect us to say, okay, it's on the paper, therefore it must be real. Well, it's not real, okay? This is a magician's game.
Okay, so moving along to the healthcare, speaking of.
Yeah, the...
Speaking of millions and trillions and billions of dollars.
The healthcare bill institutes a... it's interesting. It puts a 20% cap on medical overhead, medical insurance overhead. So 20%, I guess that includes the profits of these private insurance companies that are comprised of cartel that has bought its way into the legislative process. These insurance companies, the combined total of their profits plus whatever clerical overhead they have is capped at 20%. And this compares with the overhead of, say, Medicare, which is about 3%. So you can see, of course, and it's probably already pretty evident to the listener out there that this is a huge subsidy to the health insurance industry. Basically, it's another banker bailout, because these insurance companies are huge pools of capital, which are owned by, you know, wealthy investors. And they have been involved for years in investing in the same speculative derivative casino games as Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and all these other fake bankrupt companies that we've been bailing out all along. Another problem with the healthcare bill, the Obamacare bill, is that it ignores and actually penalizes alternative medicine, chiropractic, for instance.
Craniosacral.
Acupuncture.
Homeopathy.
Yeah, just vitamin and nutrition, nutritional therapies. You know, Americans are eating foods that are brand new in the human diet, essentially, and have only come about in the past 20 years or so. And we have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes and heart disease and all these other indicators of poor health in this society. And it started about when we started following, you know, the experts' advice on what we could eat, the food industry, the big pharma, and the medical cartel. And all of these companies happen to make profits by steering us in certain directions away from the types of diets that we've lived on for millennia, long before all of this industrial waste was introduced onto the dinner table. So it basically subsidizes a broken medical system. To give you an idea of how broken the medical system is, you know, we've been covering obstetrical abuse for quite a while, but this is only one aspect. I mean, they are drugging children, you know, not addressing issues of whether they get enough sleep or, you know, whether they get enough exercise, whether they're eating right. They simply drug them into submission to sit through, you know, their program of indoctrination in the public schooling system, and inject them with toxic chemicals and vaccinations, which they are covering up. And I've covered that before on this show, that it is now well known, at least since 2005, that mercury in vaccines does in fact cause autism in children who are genetically vulnerable to heavy metal toxicity. It's a particular trait, a metabolic or a genetic trait of their mitochondria that inhibits their ability to deal with heavy metal contamination. So, and now I read that there is a video monitoring, a company that manufactures video monitoring equipment for department stores and so on. They are now marketing their video cameras and recording machines to hospitals to monitor the hand washing practices of doctors to try to get them to start washing their hands. And apparently the current rate in some hospitals of hand washing between patients is about 20-30%. So this company actually has made a business model out of trying to get doctors in hospitals to start observing basic hygiene. So, in fact, there was an epidemic of something called childbed fever back in the 1800s, where doctors that were fresh from autopsies would go into the obstetrical wards and infect women with staph germs, leading to epidemics of maternal mortality. So, somehow these lessons never get learned. So we really need some competition in the medical field. We don't need to be subsidizing and allowing the medical cartel to monopolize the practice of medicine, which is essentially what this healthcare bill does. So, in keeping with the medical cartel coverage here, I need to call some people who are demonstrating in Washington right now for Genital Integrity and Awareness Week. And so, Janelle, do you have anything to say while I make this phone call?
Is that what you've been doing?
I'm multitasking here.
Okay.
I would like to say that at the top of the hour, you mentioned... Lord of mercy, my mic wasn't on. I would like to say that at the top of the hour... that you, Rich, mentioned that we weren't going to talk about obstetrics today, and I just wanted to clarify that this show is not about obstetrics. This show is about all the different aspects of our society and our actions and decisions and legislature and personal behavior regarding the care of our youngest and our most precious, and that is the newborn and the child. So, I prefer to talk about what we can do to create humans that are healthy and harmonious and from the beginning of life. So I focus on the primal period as the place where that is as the foundation for health is developed. And that naturally gets into talking about the obstetrics and midwifery issues, which we've been covering. He's leaving the studio. Don't leave. He's leaving me. Uh-oh. That must be a prenatal thing that I panicked when he's leaving me. he's trying to get someone on the air who is actually in Washington, D.C. as we speak at the NOCIRC, the annual NOCIRC. Is it a convention? Or it's a march. They are in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol advocating for intact boys in our culture. We have intact girls and we need intact boys. So he is trying to get someone on the line who will tell us about what's going on there. And I think this is an annual, maybe like going on 10 years, where people have been marching in D.C. on behalf of males in our society who are cruelly and wrongfully dismembered as infants when they don't have an option, when they don't have a choice, when other people make this choice for them. And what we're knowing now is that this choice was made by parents because they were believing what was told to them about the benefits of circumcision and that is not the case, we know now, so that we now have only a 50% rate of circumcision, and we'd like to see that at zero. It is one of the most atrocious things that can happen to a young boy, and Rich and I have talked a lot over the months about how this is most likely a very core issue, a very early primal issue that creates certainly a neural system problem with a boy whose foreskin, where all of his nerve endings are, when that is taken off, but it interferes with his intimacy, with his mother, his trust of strangers, his ability to be empathetic. Go ahead. Are you ready?
So I think we have them on the line here, if I did this properly. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. So can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is David Wilson. I'm the director and organizer of the Stop Infant Circumcision Society that we hold an annual march and demonstration here on the west side of the Capitol. And I'm standing here right now overlooking the mall.
And how many years have you been doing this?
This is my 17th year for coming here to Washington, D.C. Wow. It's my 15th year for being on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. I originally was just protesting in front of the Supreme Court and then realized that I could legally get a permit to be on the grounds of the Capitol. So for the last 15 years, this is where I've been. I actually learned about this at the age of 10. My mother's from the Bahamas, and my cousins, of course, were not circumcised down there and saw that they were quite different than me. And as I grew up into my teen years and learned about this, I was appalled to learn what exactly had happened to me. And I spoke out about it throughout my entire teens and swore I would never circumcise my sons, but I had daughters, so that wasn't an issue at that point.
Mm-hmm. So have you met with very many receptive people, for instance, especially legislators and public officials?
No, we are educating the public. Uh-huh. The thousands of tourists, and when I say tourists, we're looking at school-age children on up that come here, and they collect information, and they want to, you know, they see us with our large banners of, the foreskin is not a birth defect, the others that say genital protection for girls and boys. And we also have a rather large banner that says whose penis, whose body, whose rights. And that banner there draws the junior and senior high school kids up here because they're laughing and joking because they really don't know about it. But when they come up is when we have the opportunity to start talking to them and educating them about the foreskin. And most people get it. Of course, there's always a few diehards that believe in this insanity, and they attempt to give us a hard time. But we've even changed some of their minds after informing them of the damage and the loss of sexual nerves and the problems associated with circumcision, which is lost glands and even death.
But, I mean, basically the problems with circumcision are universal. I mean, if you amputate erogenous tissue, you, of course, lose erogenous sensory input.
Yes.
I mean, when they talk about complications of circumcision, circumcision is the complication, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we know that, but getting the public to fully understand that, and when I speak about the deaths from circumcision, that is something that people just never hear about. And, of course, we know the answer to that. They never list the cause of death as being directly related to circumcision. It's always listed as hemorrhage or infection, but the child would have never bled to death or gotten such a serious infection had his genitals just been left alone.
Right.
Thus, the reason for being here, when Congress passed the law 14 years ago, tomorrow, matter of fact, and we will be marching to the White House at 4 o'clock from the west side of the Capitol, We're pointing out the fact that we're violating our own constitution by the 14th Amendment, which guarantees Congress shall pass no laws that are sexually discriminatory. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to protect the genitals of the female, we need to protect the genitals of the male and the intersex child. We do speak out about that as well, because as we all know, doctors and parents are making a brutal decision to make their child either a boy or a girl, when that child should have the opportunity to grow up and be make the decision and an informed decision.
Right. So I understand you have one of the elders of the movement there, Van Lewis?
Yes, Van Lewis is right here. He was arrested how many years ago? In 1970, Van Lewis and his brother Ben were demonstrating in front of Tallahassee General Hospital in Tallahassee, Florida. They were arrested, put in jail, and the police couldn't figure out what to charge them with, so they had to let them go. But I'll hand the phone over to Van, but I ask everybody to please check out the website, stopinfantcircumcision.org. And we have a wealth of information there, as well as photos from past events, and we're planning on getting these photos up as soon as possible. And right now, I thank you for taking the time to address this matter, and let me turn this over to Van Lewis.
Okay, thank you for being there.
Hey.
Hey, Van, how are you doing?
Hi, Van.
Good. Is this Rich?
Yes, uh-huh.
And Janelle.
Howdy.
Wow, so you've been doing this a very long time.
Yeah, this is 40 years in public demonstrating. They actually did charge us with disturbing the peace, but it was our claim that it was the doctors inside the hospital who were disturbing the peace.
So this is, it must have just blown their minds. I mean, back then especially, it was probably unheard of to question medical authority.
Yeah, it was pretty unheard of. And it was during the Vietnam War, so protesters were not wildly popular.
But
we learned something, I think, from the experience of a lot of things, but one of them was that you never really know who your allies are going to be. It's hard to prejudge accurately. Our attorney trying to get us out of jail was a Jewish lawyer who thought we'd lost our minds. And
Uh-oh. Damn. Oh, well.
Did you just say that on the
air? I did. FCC, come and get me. Well, that's a shame. Van was one of the senior movement members.
And I wanted to ask him what keeps you going for 40 years, and also thank him, because 40 years ago, like with Marilyn Milos when she began 30 years ago, people thought they were nuts. And I mean, now everywhere you go, people are actually talking about the merits of whether or not to circumcise, and people are really looking at the truth. But like 40 years ago, that's amazing.
He must have known then what we only recently found out, you and me, about the subject.
Well, I found out 35 years ago.
Okay. Well,
I saw my son circumcised, I was holding him when they did it,
yeah.
And I went into shock.
There's so much left to learn.
Are you there?
Oh, wow.
We thought you were gone.
We lost you for a while. We thought you had disconnected.
Oh, no. Sorry. Did you
hear us talking about you?
Did you hear us?
Yeah, I've been hearing what's been said.
Oh, well, good. You got to hear that. What did keep you going for 40 years?
Yeah, that's what we wanted to know is, did you know back then what you know now?
Well, no, I've continued to learn, and I'm convinced from 40 years of learning about this that no one on this planet understands this issue fully yet. Nobody understands how important it is yet. I feel sure that I don't.
Same with cord clamping.
I don't think anybody does.
Right. I mean,
what's that?
It's the same with cord clamping when they prematurely sever the baby from the placenta. I think it's the same thing. I think that it's an extraordinary organ that has a function long after birth, and I think it's going to be the same thing that we're going to find out years from now, how traumatizing we've been to humanity.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
It's just another one of those cuts they do.
So,
well, thank you for all that you've done all these decades. That's amazing.
Are you still getting me?
Yes, I can.
I think I've lost you.
Oh, you can't hear us?
They said his battery was going down, maybe that's what's happened.
Can you hear
us? Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Well, that's the problem with battery-operated telephones.
Yep, the gifts and the shadows. So, moving right along.
So, so do you want to...
So I have a little... We're having a smorgasbord here today. Mm-hmm. I have a segment. 2 years ago, well, it's been more than that, 2.5, almost 3 years ago, when I first came up to KOPN, my son had just deployed to Iraq, and I was very much unraveling. And I found the family of KOPN, where I could express my voice and have free speech, which was very important to me at that point, trying to wrap my head around why my child was there and having my voice was important. So I created a segment called Until They All Come Home, and I'm going to play that today, the intro to that show, because I have an interview that I did this afternoon with Drew Cameron, who is founder of Combat Paper Makers, and they are coming to town. I'm bringing them to town to do an intro presentation to our community about their project. They take soldiers' uniforms and they pulp them and they make them into paper, and the soldiers do artwork and poetry on their uniforms. And we'd like to bring them back in the fall to do a program. So I interviewed them today. They couldn't be live because they're in Pittsburgh. So we're going to try to put that up. And it's been 2 years since I actually did a segment called Until They All Come Home. And we're making eye contact here, but we're not going to... Rich is at the board here. So sure. We... He is not just a troop. He is...
My brother.
My grandson.
My brother.
My grandson.
My brother.
My uncle.
My brother-in-law.
My nephew.
My nephew.
My friend.
He is my son. We are really touched by the war because our loved one is there. It's really hard to see the lack of support and sacrifice for the soldiers.
Carrying the petition to Congress ask them to officially end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and restore the balance of powers between the branches of our government.
Why do we have war?
So we can see the flag of the United States of America, which is the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yay!
Uncle Joe was raised to go to Iraq.
If you're someone who goes to war, and if you kill or wound someone, you will never forget that.
Make sure before you send our children to kill. Make sure before you send our children to kill. Make sure before you send our children to kill.
In the halls of Congress and debating whether it was okay to torture or not. In my America, that debate lasts about 2 seconds. How far we have come away from what we believe this country to be. And what my walk about is take the back.
So-called anti-war protesters, they have the freedom, the opportunity, the prosperity to express their views.
In fact, my son would be the first one to say that's what he's fighting for, so that people can have freedom to express that.
The people that either don't know or don't appreciate the military is that, you know, I'm in uniform for you to be able to have the ability to think and say whatever you want and to not have a connection with the military if, you know, that's what you choose not to do.
Peace is good. Freedom is better.
I tell all my family members that if something were to happen to me, I'd be doing exactly what I wanted to be doing. I appreciate the support that I get from my family.
You've really made a huge sacrifice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
When our men and women come home, they need to be able to come home.
They're over there. They're serving the country. They're being called. I'm glad to see the American people now. People coming back from Iraq with respect.
Thanks for all the support. I've never seen a parade this big before here, so that's definitely a big
big deal. It's really good to see all the people supporting them, like military people. It is definitely hard, like when you come back and you don't have anyone to, catch on the back.
It's really good to see you.
Thank you.
We don't all have to go to war to make a sacrifice. What sacrifice could you make in your daily life to support the men and the women who are carrying out the decisions of our elected leaders in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq?
And if I gotta walk 3,000 miles, and if I gotta walk farther, I'll do it. I'll do whatever I have to try to get my country back.
This is America, and this you will not find in any other country in the world.
I want my country back.
May no soldier go unloved. May no soldier walk alone. May no soldier be forgotten until they all come home. That's the motto of Soldiers Angels. Until They All Come Home is a weekly segment on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the news at 5 and features local community people who are making a contribution and a sacrifice to honor that sacrifice of the men and the women who are serving the American people in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're not just troops. They're our people carrying out the orders of the people that you elected. Music in the background of the montage is called Tapestry of Freedom by Kenan Baxter of Indiana. This is Janelle Martin Miranda, KOPN 89.5 Columbia. Today my guest is Drew Cameron, co-founder of Combat Papermakers at combatpaper.org, and also on Facebook, you can join Combat Paper Comes to Columbia, Missouri. Okay, well, welcome, Drew. And tell us about the program that you're going to be doing this Friday.
Well, this Friday, what we'll be doing is sharing some of the experiences that we've had over the past 2 years as we've been traveling around the country teaching papermaking to fellow veterans. So we'll be speaking about the genesis and the intent of our work, as well as sharing some of the art that's been created, some pictures and slides of different workshops and some of the individuals and their stories who have come involved, and really where we're going to go from here. So what our plans are for the future, and our hopes of returning and working in the community in Columbia.
And when you come back in the fall, what would that look like? What would you like to see?
The workshops that we teach, what they are is they're an intensive 3 to 5 day workshop where we go through all of the different techniques and steps of turning one's uniform or article of clothing of symbolic significance into paper, into prints, and then also into books.
Wow. So
we'll be working directly with veterans, family members, survivors of trauma due to conflict in Colombia.
And so this is community-based, and you will provide this service for our local veterans at no charge. Is that correct?
Yeah, the workshops are always free and open, definitely.
And how do you do that? You're a nonprofit, right?
Not really, unfortunately. We how do we fund the project? Well, we.
Well, it's important for us to know because we Oops, I'm sorry.
Institutions in the area, so from academic institutions or from studios or other organizations that are doing art council organizations or community organizations that are able to provide financial support for us to provide these workshops for free. And so that's kind of the way we go about it. We are a fiscally sponsored organization, so that means that we do have a fiscal agent who is a nonprofit. So for some grants and donations that are applicable, we're able to have that nonprofit status.
And so in our community, that's important to know because in order to bring you here, our community needs to financially support this project for you to come here. So that's part of what Friday is about, so that people locally
Definitely.
Can come and hear what your project is about, how you started, show the artwork. The artwork will be for sale, and it will be showing all day Friday in Orr Street Studios. And I do know that Columbia College here and the University of Missouri and Stevens College have all expressed interest in helping you. And it will be held at, in the fall, it will be held at the Artlandish Galleries. And our hope is actually that we will create a core group of people here who will learn the skills that you have to teach, and that they will continue to outreach to the veterans of Missouri, because Columbia is sort of a hub for the Veterans Administration, so a lot of veterans live here and in the outlying areas. So I'm hoping that we'll create a sustainable papermaking project of our own.
Most definitely. I think also with the GI Bill, there are a lot of veterans and recently returned service members who are now pursuing degrees in college.
Right, and a lot of them come to the Columbia College here.
No, yeah, there's a lot of young people who have left the kind of extreme experience and are now trying to pursue some sort of academic training, but oftentimes are kind of feel alienated and alone, and like they don't relate to a lot of their cohorts that they're going through the programs with. So what we strive to do is kind of bridge that gap between the veteran and the military experience, and then the citizen responsibility and understanding of what that experience really means. So we use this art form, as well as the poetry, the creative writing, and these public events as a means to articulate the complexities of those experiences and what we can really do as communities to support these people, to listen to them, to understand their stories, and pay testament to kind of what has been done.
What kind of success are you seeing with the veterans that you're working with?
Say again?
What kind of success are you seeing with the veterans? What's the outcome working with the veterans? In doing the paper.
It definitely varies between the people that we work with, but one of our most notable achievements would be that these workshops act as an introduction into creative elements. Specifically, we work in paper, book, and print. And people who participate in the workshop become energized and connected with other people and other artists, and other citizens in the community, and continue this work in the way that best fits their community, starting up their own projects or starting up ongoing workshops to continue to do outreach with other veterans in the area. So we've been able to train and establish satellite mills in Colorado Springs and Cleveland, Ohio. And the newest one is in Kalamazoo with former Guantanamo Bay prison guard Christopher Arendt. So the idea here is to teach the skill set to create a body of work, and then also to give the tools and connect people in their community so that they can continue this work as they see fit.
That's amazing. And I'm so happy that you're going to be here with us. I'm looking forward to meeting you. We've talked a lot, but we haven't met yet, and I'm so looking forward to seeing you on Friday and hearing your presentation. Again, it's going to be at Orr Studios, just a half a block north of Walnut Street in Columbia, Missouri. From 5 to 8 p.m., our plans are we have an open mic for spoken word and music, and Tyree Bindham, a spiritual MC with One Soul, also a Marine veteran, will oversee that, and Cheryl Clapton, a local songwriter and singer who had two sons deployed, will be singing her music, and other veterans and families are invited to also read their poetry and sing songs and do their presentations. And then at 6 o'clock, Drew and his co-founder, Drew, will present their program. And we hope that you'll be able to join us Friday at Orr Street Studios to begin this process of bringing this amazing project to our own community here in Columbia, Missouri. Drew, anything else that you'd like to add?
For me, it's really meaningful to be coming and doing work in the Midwest. I'm originally from Iowa City, so for me, this is kind of bringing it back home. I moved out east a number of years ago and have thus far been hard-pressed to find communities interested to work with us and to bring us in. So this is very exciting for me as well. Invite people to come down and share their story, hear ours, and connect with the work, and perhaps we can collaborate for an excellent program here in the upcoming fall.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be great to meet you, Jenna.
Yeah, have a great trip.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye. The project is co-sponsored by Orr Studios, Artlandish Galleries, Veterans for Peace, the Charlie Adkins Chapter, Columbia Peace Coalition, and Don Emery Real Estate. Computer time and printing have been donated by a FedEx office. Again, that's Friday, April 2nd from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Orr Street Studios, 106 Orr Street, Columbia, Missouri, one half block north of Walnut on Orr. This is Janelle Martin Miranda with another segment of Until They All Come Home, 89.5 FM, Columbia, Missouri.
Thank you, Janelle. Very, very nice.
All righty. I haven't heard that montage that I did for a while, and it reminds me of some of the work that I've done and that we've been talking about related to birth and why we're talking about it, because we keep talking about creating a peaceful society.
Birth relates to everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, in 2003 I had on my website, my birth trauma therapy website, that peace on earth begins with peace at birth. And we keep plugging away. Recently I came up with another quote, and I've been looking at how we invade, how mother and baby are so invaded. And if we could have a social and national agenda to keep mother and baby together in those moments after birth, and for them to create that attachment, I really do believe that we could create a different kind of society. And on my Facebook, I put a status that came to me the other day, and it was, if we stop invading humans during birth, we'll create humans who don't invade. And that to me says it more clearly about how we can create peace by creating peace at birth, and how we can eliminate war and a lot of issues in our society, a lot of issues in our families, a lot of personal issues that people deal with, from, you know, fear of abandonment to alcoholism to abuse to just fears of, like, when you left the air room, I was like, oh, he's leaving me. Where did those come from? Where's the first time we're abandoned? Every time that we have an experience of being abandoned or having somebody disregard us, there's a little part of us very, very deep in the limbic system, in the amygdala, that is the baby, that first experience. And that's why it's so profound. And I think that that's how we can create a healthy, harmonious, happy humanity. It's so simple. All the things we talk about, keep the mother and the baby together, and touch the baby as if this baby is sacred. This baby is sacred. If we do that, we could create a whole new society, a whole new humanity, just by being kind to a newborn baby.
Yeah, how is it that we don't do that? We've delegated the decisions as to childcare to people who function in institutions which are corrupt, that's all.
Do you know, in 1995 and in 2005, the American Medical Academy has advised that we no longer use the word mothering, that we use caregiver and parent, and that is to accommodate a lot of the social changes that we've had because of women being in the workplace and feminism. And so no longer using the word mother, that is so profound. Like, medically, don't use the word mother, use parent or caregiver.
Yeah.
Because so many children are even going to daycare as early as 3 weeks, you know, so there's a caregiver.
So,
and I remember T. Barry Brazelton, he's an MD, and he's associated with the Baby Friendly out in Boston, has written many books. I watched him on cable. I remember I was pregnant with my third, and he was saying, this was 1983, he was saying that every baby needs someone who's in love with it. A newborn baby, an infant, a young child, up until age 2, needs to have somebody who's gaga in love with it. And to me, it gave me the information that I needed, because I was growing up into my young womanhood during the era of, you know what, if mama's happy, everybody's happy. Babies are happy at daycare. They're just as happy at daycare where they can learn things. And because, you know, it's all about self-actualization. It was about career and being out there, being more like a man. And that it didn't really matter, even though... And this coincided with Prescott's work being squelched. But, you know, it's When I heard him saying that, a baby needs somebody gaga in love with it for the first 2 years of life, it resonated so strongly with me. And my son's father and I arranged for the first 2 years. There was always somebody with him, and he was breastfed until he weaned himself. And it's so important that we as a society begin to focus on the early primal period and focus our money there. Yes, women have to work now. It's a different world that relates to your economy.
It relates to the Federal Reserve.
But like, let's don't put all of our money into ADHD and family crisis and divorce and all this stuff. And all these, this huge, huge amount, billions of dollars go to fixing the problem,
cleaning up after the problem.
After we've disrupted the beginning. Yeah. I mean, I don't know very many women, actually, who wouldn't love to be with their babies and also have outlets, of course. But most women, when they are really left to be what's really, really true in their heart and in their bodies, they want to be with their babies. And we're running out of time. The tech guys are coming in.
Babies need that, too.
Coming up next is the tech guys at 6 o'clock, and we are running out of room. But that is, I believe, how we will create a different sort of society is when we really begin to honor mothers and babies and that bonding that they have and that they need in order to really live a life fully and intimately and empathetically, to create relationships with others and be a good person in the world. What do you think?
I think the same applies to the veterans as they come home. They need a good hug. They need an apology for the American people for allowing these corrupt government officials to send them.
Save our babies.
Yes.
Don't let your baby grow up to be a soldier.
The monster's gone. He's on the